It's going down here on 102.5 The Game. A lot happening. Hey, in the middle of July.
I love it.
We got a show that you do not want to miss what's going on. Willie and D-Mace brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and older and in Tennessee to bet. Steven Stamkos, later this hour. We're kind of on Stamkos watch. The time is a little bit flexible. And so we think it's going to be, we'll just kind of wait for an update here. Nick Kieser is on site as well. He's doing his first appearance.
It reminds me of Santa Nashville. Claus. He's like, you know, Santa Claus checked the list twice. Uh-huh. He knows you're watching. He's watching. He's okay. Everywhere.
Yeah.
He's got all the news.
And, of course, it's also reminiscent of Anchorman, the Panda Watch, right? That was going on in San Diego at the time.
San Diego.
We need you.
San Diego.
We need you, Ron Burgundy.
Assemble. News team,
assemble.
Oh, we're right here, Ron. Yeah. We've been here the whole time.
We've been
shooting pool. Oh, boy. That movie gets better with age.
Quickly, I told you off air, the San Francisco 49ers star receiver Brandon Ayuk has officially requested a trade from the team per Mike Garofalo. So,
oh boy.
Ooh, let's see.
People have kind of set the table. That's been brewing a little bit.
Yes.
Apparently it's not going very well. The consensus seems to be they may have to choose between Ayuk and Deebo Samuel. Right?
I think
in the coming years.
Yeah,
don't have enough money to keep them both there.
Exactly. I think Ayuk is a very good player. I believe Ayuk is a better receiver than Deebo, but I think Deebo fits more what San Francisco likes to do. They like to be multiple. They like to use players in certain roles, different roles. And Deebo, just like they use Christian McCaffrey as a receiver, running back, and all, they use Deebo Samuel the same way. So I can't see them, at least not this year, if they were, you know, making the decision. Yeah, they're going to keep Deebo because he fits what they want to do more.
Also, you know, that's a team that knows in the coming years they're going to have to pay the quarterback. Mm-hmm. They've got the unique luxury of an excellent quarterback who is ultra cheap, super cheap.
Yes.
He was the last man picked in the draft.
He's playing for pennies right
now
compared to
NFL.
So
you can load
salaries.
Up the roster. So this is a, like, you know, you probably don't want to – you don't want to trade Ayuk or don't want to fulfill his request because it's like, wait a minute. We want all these guys for at least one more year. Let's load up and try to win it. So that's going to be interesting how they proceed with that request. You know, it's a request. You don't have to trade him.
No, you don't.
But he'll, you know, he can be very grumpy.
Yeah, you don't want
the wide receiver. We might have to have Caroline's wide receiver translator.
Exactly.
some of the quotes that might start coming out.
This is what it meant. So, I want a damn trade. Yeah. Get me out of here. Y'all not paying me. That's
no translation needed.
Exactly.
I think honestly, fantasy owners for Brandon Ayuk, I feel like are kind of happy because you don't have to resort on either it's Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah, and then you throw Christian McCaffrey in there. It's like some of the touches are being
and
dwindled down. Yeah, and Kittle's too. So fantasy player, I mean, fantasy, you know, people
I am one.
Probably love it that he could possibly go somewhere else. Jaden Daniels, watch the Commanders. Here he comes.
Oh, if that happens.
We've got a week until training camp starts. We've got SEC Media Days going on right now. We've got a lot of texts on our text line driven by WilsonCallyHyundai.com. And by the way, we have a new service. So you're not going to get the confirmation text. We have Dylan, who's been a texter for a long time. He goes, I don't even know if these messages are getting through.
Dylan, they're getting through, but you're not getting that confirmation text of thank you for texting.
Yeah.
You're not going to get that text back. So we are getting your messages and continue to text us because we love it. We love reading your questions on air. So, Dylan, we're here for you, man.
He had some wisecracks yesterday when we were talking about the Pac-2. Mm-hmm. Or the Pac-12, the Pac-1-2 of Oregon State and Washington State. Like,
confirmed.
What is there?
It's confirmed. It's in the game. It's Pac-12 with two teams.
It's in the video game, you're saying?
Yes, but it's still a thing.
They're still alive.
They're still
alive. The conference is on life support. They have two teams. And they have Merton Hanks working for the league.
Absolutely.
We confirmed that yesterday. So here are some other comments from looking at the new horizon – Mm-hmm. How does it affect all of these powerhouse teams in the SEC and the other, the other teams, the second division teams, if you will, trying to make it work in this new world, like Vanderbilt? Of how do you try to carve out your share, your level of success? I'm saying a guy. It could be a girl. I don't know. Yeah. He doesn't have a name. So put your name if you can. For years, Georgia has fired out of the gate with Clemson, Oregon, and Notre Dame week one, even going back to when Boise was hot. It was never part of the discussion when they couldn't win the SEC. And I agree. I think teams recognized a few years ago, Nick Saban, how many times did he start in Atlanta playing against Florida State or somebody like that? I think he recognized early that, number one, you got a team you can do it with, but that early season premier matchup gets a lot of eyeballs. And even if you lose it early, you still got a chance to play your way into a playoff, especially now with more spots open.
But that's why I think teams would rather, especially in the SEC, let's just sort of limit this down, because as much as I love the Big Ten, being a former Big Ten student athlete or athletic student, I know that the SEC is a deeper conference. I'm not a fool about that. Which causes me to believe that, scheduling those hard games is not a prerequisite anymore. You don't have to, especially in the SEC. Now, I know they have sort of this unwritten rule that you schedule, but you don't have to do it, because now that you've added Texas and Oklahoma, they was the outside teams
that you were
playing.
But the league is still sticking to only playing 8 conference games for now.
Down the road,
that's going to change. I think they'll be forced to go to 9.
Yeah, because you have the best conference in all of college football. Why do you have to go outside the conference to play Clemson or Michigan?
You must have played for Nick Saban or something, because Nick Saban was always like that. He was like, let's just play all of the teams.
And Nick is right.
Yeah. But you got Vanderbilt. James Franklin used to go nuts. He goes, I want to keep it at 8. Mm-hmm. There is no incentive. I'm trying to build a program. Mm-hmm. Now, he went through a stretch at Vanderbilt. He was beating teams when they were a little bit down a notch. He whipped Tennessee a couple times. He beat Georgia.
Didn't he beat Florida?
Beat Florida. Mm-hmm. Like they had some really good wins relative for Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. But also he was like, I'm not going out and play. He canceled a game that it was supposed to be against Northwestern. Not that that's a powerhouse, but that would have been a tough game. Right?
Well, they were a good team back then.
Oh, yeah.
On Northwestern.
Yeah, that was the good Pat Fitzgerald, typical Northwestern team, solid teams. And they had lost to Northwestern the year before, I think, James Franklin got there, or it might have been even – no, it was while James Franklin was there. An early season game they lost to them up there. Mm-hmm. Northwestern was supposed to come back, and he was like, no, we're buying them out. We're going to replace them with UAB. And he took a lot of heat, but he was like, I need wins. Mm-hmm. I want wins. So that's still the mentality, I think, from – that type of program where you're trying to build.
And
you need Ws, but if you're trying to play for the playoff – then I still think there's going to be an argument for strength of schedule.
Okay. Teams, we're talking about the bottom half teams. Now, I can deal with the bottom half teams, continuing trying to build their program up so they're not playing, the Clemsons or the Notre Dames or, one of these other power teams outside of their conference. I can see them not doing that because they're trying to build their program up. I don't think, because of the gauntlet, or I can see why they would want to go outside of their conference and play some, play a softer schedule for the lower half of the team. I can see why they would want to do that. The upper half team, it's like, why do we have to schedule powerhouses? We got enough powerhouses in this conference. We should be able to schedule. Now, if we decide to schedule Michigan or somebody, great. Clemson, Florida State, great. But it shouldn't be this unwritten rule that, we're only going to play 8 games, but you got to schedule a powerhouse outside. No, I don't. We got enough games within our own conference.
Yes.
Put us in a position now, even more so now, because there's 12 teams.
When they go to 9 conference games, I will completely agree with that. In the meantime, you still have to, because you might it might be part of it is good. You might get lucky and mm-hmm. get a softer schedule, but you might be looking at your schedule going, man, we could win all of these games, but we could get dinged on the strength of schedule because we don't have a great non-conference. So that one big one out of conference I still think has a benefit in an eight-game league schedule.
But I don't think the way that the playoff system is ran now, that they would take a big hit for that, not having like the strength of schedule. Because if I'm playing teams within my conference, my strength of schedule is going to be high anyway. Just because I added a Michigan, a Florida State, Miami, one of those teams outside my conference, Clemson, it's not going to make my strength of schedule that much, you know, harder. You know, if I play the eight games and I'm playing, you know, say, for instance, Alabama, I'm playing UT, I'm playing Georgia, I'm playing Florida, I'm playing Texas, I'm playing Oklahoma. You're talking about at least three out of the five teams that more than likely would be top 10 teams. So then why do I have to schedule somebody else? So it shouldn't hurt me as much anymore as opposed to the old system where it was only four teams, so we had to.
It's going to be something to watch, is especially the first couple years mm-hmm. of the selection committee. Yeah. What are they going to value? Mm-hmm. They are humans. There's going to be a computer module. There's going to be a strength of schedule. We'll see how they sift through.
Schedule didn't matter last year because they left Florida State out of it.
Well, yeah, the 13-0. The injuries came in and got them. Texter says four are going from the SEC. That leaves three other conference champions. Actually, four, because they're taking five league champions. Mm-hmm. The fifth highest ranked league champion is automatic. And a couple at large for ACC or Notre Dame. Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss. How do we feel about those four?
I feel good about them, but I don't think the SEC gets four teams in.
A lot of pressure on Ole Miss this year, I think.
It should be. They went out and they raided the portal, and you know they had good players already. And Lane Kiffin is a damn genius when it comes to offense. So, yeah, the pressure should – and they just paid him more money. The pressure should be on him to at least now that the playoff has expanded, he should at least make the playoffs. And if he doesn't, then, hey, we got to rethink some things. Now, I'm not saying fire him because, you know, hey, you may end up going the other way because I think Lane is a good coach. But now that the doors have been opened a little bit more to get in the club, you got to make it, Ole Miss, because you were right there at the door when you were like the last two or three people, and they were like, ah, too many.
It's probably
fire hazard. We can't allow any more. And you were sitting there right at the door, like, please let me in. Well, now you can get in.
Now I'm thinking of Fire Marshal Bill from Jim Carrey,
yes,
in Living Color. But it's an interesting strategy. It's probably the strategy that Ole Miss should use based mm-hmm. on their history, is like, look, let's go for it. Let's try to be that team that goes and grabs players from a lower level of college who are older to bolster our roster and help us line up with the heavyweights. We'll see if he can have I shouldn't say lightning in a bottle, but you might have some more hit or miss years, but your big years might be even bigger. And this year it looks like it's lined up. Would you agree, Nick? Do you have them in the playoff?
I do.
UT?
You've got Ole Miss in the playoff?
If they can go 9-3, I think a 9-3 ball club gets you into a 12-team.
Do you think 9-3?
I think so.
Do you think there will be a 9-3 team that makes it?
There'll be at least one. And wow. I think it might be Ole Miss. One, because, and disagree with me if you want, but mm-hmm. I think the committee always kind of gives the SEC the benefit of the doubt for the most part.
I ain't going to disagree with you on that one.
It's going to be the strength of schedule more so than just the cachet, I think, of the SEC.
Right.
To me, that will be the thing. Like, hey, we had to play X, Y, Z. Look at this compared to the team that you are putting us side by side for that last bid. And it might not just be one team they're comparing. It might be four teams that have roughly the same resume.
And that's been Greg Sankey's like selling point to everybody else kind of just publicizing the SEC, is that this is the best of the best. This is where you're going to get your toughest football in all of college football. So with that being said, that kind of persuades a little bit of some voters or maybe the committee in some regard. That's just how I perceive it. But like that, they always give the SEC the benefit of the doubt on some teams.
Oh, they do. I'm not.
There is a perception from around the nation that that's the case.
That the SEC, and that's why one of the texters said, oh, they'll get four in. If that fourth team is a 9-3, 8-4 team. I'm not sure they're
8-4. There's no
8-4. No, but 9-3. I'm not sure. Depending on what the other conferences do, I'm not sure that 9-3 gets you in, because you may have a 12-0 in the ACC, then you may have a 11-1 team, and then you may have a 10-2 team. So you're going to take the 9-3 team over these teams and its strength of schedule. If we're going by the strength of schedule, which the committee didn't do last year, if we go by the strength and they're comparable, you got to take the 10-2 team as opposed to the 9-3 team.
I think that's the other side of the coin of Nick's argument. I think some would say, yeah, the SEC gets benefit of the doubt. It's the toughest league, and so a 9-3 could get in there. But is there a political side? It's like I talk about this in the baseball selection every year, because the SEC probably has about 12 teams that could go and win a regional across the country, especially because of the weather and things like that. It's hard for baseball programs north of the Mason-Dixon line to really compete recruiting-wise. So when a team has an outstanding year, even though they haven't played the same schedule, the committee's kind of like, can we get a couple of northern teams in there just for, let's balance it out geographically and stuff. I think there's going to be some of that of, hey, okay, let's have a national tournament here. It's a 12-team playoff. We don't want this to be the SEC Invitational, right? I think there's going to be a little bit of that struggle, because the reality is it is a better brand of football, but it's also like we want everybody to have a seat at the table. That's why they have 5 automatic bids. Make no mistake about that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they know that's one less team they got to worry about for SEC, because they're going to get one in that way.
They want everybody to eat, in a sense.
Yeah, everybody's got to eat.
But it's going to be hard to eat, you know, if you're dealing with a two-prong fork, you know. If you ain't got a four-prong fork, it's kind of hard to eat that lasagna or that pasta or that meat. No, it's hard. Okay, maybe not meatballs either.
I have been the guy that breaks the plastic fork and has to play for either half a fork or two of the prongs are gone. I'm trying to make it happen with two.
Anyway, I got some scotch tape back there and some scotch tape with my fork back there. I will say this just hit my brain. You know, yesterday Greg Sankey mentioned about the tie break in the SEC.
Oh, yeah. Good luck with that.
They're still trying to figure that out. What if that's on purpose?
Okay.
Because you're saying the automatic bids. What if the SEC doesn't find a solution?
Well, that's to determine who's in the championship game, right?
Yeah. Right. And if they don't figure that out, then so what? Then they just have two
and also,
champions?
Also, is it,
and those are two,
is it not
bids?
Just the tiebreaker for the first two, which would put you in the championship game, but it's also could be a little who finished third, fourth in a tiebreaker too, if you had that, because that might determine rankings or steer people towards a ranking that could get a team in as an at-large.
That puts more stress on the committee. Because say if there's 4 teams that are 10-2 in the SEC, then the committee has more stress on their shoulders to figure it out.
They didn't figure this out. They put the cart before the horse, and now they're trying to backtrack and spin it around and get everything back in order. You ain't getting it back in order this year.
Mm.
You're not.
All right. I'm told that the Stephen Stamkos press conference for the general media is winding down, wrapping up. So we are expected to be joined by Stephen Stamkos in just a few minutes, so let's take our break. I want to read Ty's text from Camden, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Texas, all the hype, all the questions, the SEC Media Day in Dallas, and they also got one of the softer schedules in the SEC. They are playing Georgia. That Georgia at Texas later in the season, is going to be
and then
a
Texas game. Texas A&M game.
Oh, my gosh.
That's at the end of the season. That's going to be a good one.
Big time.
Yes.
All right. SEC football on the horizon. Now we're going to switch gears. Stephen Stamkos, his first trip to Nashville as a member of the Nashville Predators. Stay tuned. You're going to want to hear this. Coming back. Willie and D-Mays continues here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. And we're really excited because Stephen Stamkos is on the line with us. First trip to Nashville as a member of the Predators. One of the more exciting July 1sts we can remember on the show, with not only Stephen Stamkos making the decision to come to Nashville, but right in the same few minutes you hear that Jonathan Marchessault is coming and Brady Shea is coming. And just the excitement level. That show, I will not forget anytime soon, D-Mace.
No.
It was as Elliot Friedman likes to say, drinking through the fire hose.
And that we were doing.
It was happening in a hurry. But Steven is here in town. He just faced the general media. Nice enough to spend a few minutes with us today. Steven, welcome to Nashville, and thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. We're really excited.
Well, Steven, I read your Players Tribune post, which I thought was so well done. And I have to say, I can relate. I went to high school in Orlando, Florida, so I can picture you as an 18-year-old walking down trying to find a phone, just trying to get acclimated to your surroundings, but walking in the heat, walking a long, flat stretch, probably about four strip malls before you found a place to buy the phone. That was a great visual there.
Yeah, I mean, it was as true can be, an 18-year-old doing that. So it was, listen, I tried to just, you know, send out something. Obviously, when you're in a place for as long as I was, 16 years, there's a lot of people that helped you have a lot of success around the way. So, you know, it was kind of perfect timing. We did that yesterday, and then we knew we were coming into town here, and it was kind of, you know, that was the final piece of saying thank you and bye to Tampa, and then coming in here to Nashville today and getting acclimated to our new home, and hopefully one that will have just as much success as the last one.
It is probably a process, right, for somebody like yourself who spent so long in one place. It doesn't happen overnight where you just switch gears and say, okay, I'm on a new team now. There is sort of it takes a little time and you go through, and probably it was therapeutic for you to write that piece, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said, even in the piece, you never expect to be writing something like this, and then, you know, life happens and you have to change course, but for sure. I mean, there's such a human element to all this. And when you have a family and young kids, there's just you just grow so many bonds, even away from the rink when you've been in one place for so long. So I'd say it probably took a week, 2 weeks. And like you mentioned, writing something like this, it's just a flood of emotion. But, you know, eventually you get to a place where you're excited about the new challenge. You're excited about the new opportunity. You're looking forward to going to a place that, you know, gave you the contract that you got and was really excited about getting you and your family into their city. And that's where we're at now, you know, getting settled in, finding a place to live, getting the kids in school. Once all that, you know, that new normal and that new routine starts, it's going to feel like our new home, and we're excited about that.
You know, somebody with that process, you mentioned in your first, the day you signed, I think, the help that you had from Luke Shen and his wife in particular to sort of help paint the picture of what this area is like. And having gotten to know Luke a little bit in the last year, just what a great personality. What he seems perfect for that kind of role, to be able to help you with that kind of thing. How helpful was it to have that sounding board?
Well, it was extremely helpful. And that, you know, when you're making a decision like that, you know, it's easy for me, the hockey player, to say, okay, we're going to a new team and, you know, I can fit in with the guys and they're going to be all great. But when you have a wife and kids, that's something that is extremely difficult to put them through. So to have, you know, the Shen family who's already acclimated to the area, you know, Jess and my wife, Sandra, have been on the phone pretty much every day, you know, helping us out with making decisions of, you know, where to live, where to go to school. You know, if you need any help in this regard, here's this person's number. They've gone, you know, above and beyond. And like you said, if you know Luke and you know his family, that's the type of people that they are. So it's been a lot of help. You know, we even know some people within the organization that have been, you know, extremely helpful that we've crossed paths for in the past. So for the circumstance of changing, you know, places after so long, it's been pretty smooth sailing for us.
We'll talk with Steven Stamkos, Nashville Predators' new player. Steven, you just talked about your family, and I can attest to this, you know, playing in the NFL, having to move your whole family. Like you said, it's okay for us because we're going into a locker room with a bunch of guys that we're going to be immediate friends with. But for the family, it's a different story. How has your family, taken to you being here in Nashville? You said you know Brady Shen has helped you out a lot. He's helped your family out a lot. But that had to be important that you go to a place that your family felt, you know, welcomed, and they felt that they can thrive there.
Absolutely. I think, you know, like you said, you know, the guys are the guys. And from what I've heard, it's an amazing group of guys in this locker room. And you guys are going to be, you know, tight the moment that you walk in. You're going to have each other's backs. And I was never worried about that. But, yeah, when you have the family aspect, that's when there's a little bit of stress when that you're putting on your wife and your kids and going into a new environment. So, listen, it was something we certainly talked about and discussed, and that's part of the decision-making process and part of the reason why we chose Nashville, because obviously we know some people that have, you know, been here, played here, worked here, and they seem to love it. But we've also heard some amazing things about the city and how great it is to raise a young family here and to be part of the culture of Smashville and just everything that comes along with, you know, being a player in this great city. So, like I said, we've had so much help and support from everyone within the organization and even other people reaching out that, you know, made changes like you just mentioned in your career where you go from one place to another and how everything sometimes change can be a good thing. And it's a new challenge for us. And, you know, we're excited about, you know, meeting all, you know, the new people and the new relationships that come with that.
Now, you were able to witness, I guess, something really historic there in the city of Tampa. Obviously, Brady coming there, being a New England Patriot for so long, and then coming there, having to adjust, and then in the second year, I believe, them winning a Super Bowl. Did you
in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, in Tampa Bay. Ironically, I think some years after you guys.
No, they won the same year. Yeah, that's the whole Tampa Bay. Yeah.
So did you, being, you know, in Tampa for so long, did you study how, or did you watch that closely, how Tom Brady was able to make that transition from being in one place for basically majority of his career and then come to another? Because it's sort of like you've been in Tampa for so long, and now you get an opportunity to come here to Nashville and continue your career.
Yeah, I think you look at, you know, when you're in that situation and you realize, okay, things maybe aren't going to work out to stay where you've been, you certainly look at other athletes, other people who have been in similar shoes. Obviously, I wouldn't draw too many comparisons with Tom Brady and myself, but no, it was cool to just have a firsthand look of someone like that who, you know, people would have thought, you know, you were crazy if you ever thought that he was going to leave New England and come to Tampa of all places. But you saw, you know, what he was able to do. And certainly, you know, that's a goal of mine is to come here and try to help our team be as successful as possible. And if that includes, you know, winning a championship, that would be amazing. But, you know, there's certainly other NHL players, hockey players that, you know, played in places for a long time that went to different, you know, teams and had a lot of success. And that's what we're looking to do. Like I said, it's going to be a transition, but it's something that we're looking forward to.
We're talking with Steven Stamkos. Now, you've played center some. I'm sure they have you at wing. Has Bruno talked about where he would like to put you, or are you in this position like, hey, listen, just put me anywhere and let's go?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the attitude I've had since I switched, you know, a few years ago to play in the wing was, you know, I'll play wherever you guys want me to play. That's going to help the team. But we've had some brief discussions with Bruno about that in terms of how he sees the lineup playing out. Obviously, there's you know, some new fresh faces in the lineup, and you know, chemistry is something that sometimes takes a little time, and you want to, you know, feel some things out and try some different combinations out. But listen, if they want to put me back at center, I've certainly played enough years in this league at that position, still take a ton of face-offs, so that's something I'm completely comfortable with. And, you know, I've had a lot of success at that position in the past, so it's something I'd be certainly open-minded to.
We're talking to Steven Stamkos, Nashville Predators, and Steven, one thing too, as you try to acclimate to your new surroundings, you bring that leadership card in there too, having been a captain for so long. I remember having this conversation with a guy that you knew very well in Ryan McDonough, who was kind of that same way. And like I was asking him, I remember, how quick do you kind of go in there and try to assert yourself? How much do you feel your way? I guess you talk to a guy like Roman Josi about that kind of thing. It's going to be new for you, but How do you envision that going?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's certainly that aspect, like you said. I've been a captain for a long time, and you know, just tried to pick different attributes from former leaders that I played with, including Ryan McDonough, over the years, and you see what works, what doesn't work. And I mean, this is going to be new for me too, stepping into a locker room where, you know, it's a different dynamic than maybe what I'm used to. And certainly there's a leadership group that's already established here. And listen, you know, I'm not the type of guy that's going to come in and, you know, step on anyone's toes, you know, right away. But at the same time, I have certain qualities in myself and in my game that I feel make me the player and person that I am. And some of those qualities are going to come through, and it may take some time to get comfortable with the new group, but I'm certainly not going to change the way that I've been for the last 16 years, you know, that have helped me become successful, you know, as an individual and be part of a successful team. I'm looking to keep those things intact to help our team win. And certainly leadership is an attribute that I'm comfortable with. And, it's certainly something that hopefully I can help players on this team feel more comfortable and help them be in situations to succeed and help our team win.
Now, how was the first initial meeting with Barry? Because we love Barry here because we call him Open Book Barry. He's brutally honest. And you got to like that of a GM, because not many GMs, I don't care what sport you're in, they try to hold a lot of things close to the vest. But Barry doesn't seem to be that way. Was he as open and honest with you in the negotiations as he is with us on the air?
Well, absolutely. And I think that was a part that, you know, made our decision even easier, was being surrounded by someone, especially in the leadership position that Barry is in, who has a vision and wasn't afraid to share how aggressive he was going to be to try to make this team a Stanley Cup champion. And that's what you want to hear from a player, you know, to hear your management, to hear your coach, to hear even ownership, really, how committed they are to improving everything there is about this organization in order to help us, you know, give us every avenue that they can give us to help this team win. That's exciting to hear from a player. So, you know, Barry, like you guys said, he's open and he's honest. And that's, you know, that's how I was raised too, is, you know, there's nothing that you're going to hear from me that's going to be a surprise later. We're going to be open and honest with each other and have that form of communication. And, you know, that's really refreshing in today's day and age. And I'm looking forward to having that relationship.
Well, Steven, before we let you go, I'm looking at some old video here. One of the most fun events, unfortunately, it wasn't fun for Predator fans because you guys won the game, but the outdoor stadium game at a place where Derek played a lot of games. It was such a great event. And I'm looking at a clip of you guys coming out of the hotel in the denim and the cowboy hats. Do you still have that? Like, if you wanted to go down Broadway
tonight?
Don't
put it out, Stamkos. Don't put, if you have it, leave it in the closet, okay?
I still do. Obviously, hey, listen, that to this day, I still tell people that in terms of a regular season hockey game, obviously it's tough to compare playoffs and finals and stuff like that. But from a regular season game in the 16 years that I played in the NHL, that was the best moment that I've ever had, was playing in that outdoor game. I mean, just the atmosphere, the lead up to it, obviously, you know, it worked out better for us at the time than it did for the Preds, but just the whole show that the city put on, you know, the whatever 60,000-70,000 people that were at the game, that was something that all the players that participated in that game on both teams, I'm sure will remember forever. And you know, looking forward to be on the other side in the Preds jersey this time around. But to this day, that's one of the best memories I've had playing in this league.
Well, we're looking forward to meeting you in person. Thanks again for spending a few minutes with us on this busy day of yours. And just let me say, there has been so much excitement with you deciding to come here and play in this next chapter of your career. So I cannot even wait to get this thing started. But welcome to Nashville, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to meeting you.
Yep.
All right. Steven Stamkos, new member, Nashville Predators. That was really fun to be able to catch up with him. You can just feel the presence. You can sense the way he does interviews. He's done a lot of these before. He's been through the drill. He is a winner. Big, 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 big credibility presence that he's bringing to the table here for this franchise. It's going to be fun to see how this thing goes.
Yeah, it will be. I enjoyed his answer in regards to, you know, where do you want to play? What do you, you know, you prefer playing the wing or the center? And he's like, listen, just put me anywhere, and my game will basically do the work that it needs to do. And, you know, the question you asked him about, how do you sort of balance that with Roman Josi as far as the leadership and everything else? That was a great answer, because it's like, yeah, you don't want to step on any toes, but I got to remain the player that I have been for my whole career. I can't, you know, divert from it too much because if I do, the Predators are not getting the player that they thought they were getting if I'm deferring too much.
Yeah, and I think Roman Josi has got good experience mm-hmm. in this, along with Philip Forsberg. The leadership group, mm-hmm. they've brought in Ryan O'Reilly, who was also a captain, Ryan McDonough, who was a captain. I think what's great about Roman, and I would put Phil in this category too, they welcome the new perspective, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to come to a franchise that those guys have been with for so long and trying to take them to the next level. So they welcome that new perspective,
yes.
right? They want those guys to be themselves. So that is going to be awesome. So Steven Stamkos joining us. Great interview. We'll come back and wrap up hour number two when we come back here on 102.5 The Game.
That was great. Boom. I thought that was a good answer on Brady.
If I'm going to do this, I'll need my news team at my side.
News team! Assemble! News team! Assemble!
Oh, hi, Ron.
Hey, Ron.
What's up?
Hey, hi, Brian.
Oh. And we did have to get the news team assembled today with SEC man. Media Day going on. Steven Stamkos introducing himself to Nashville in person for the first time, joining us on the show. We got a loaded show. We were just talking about it. You take a July 16th from any random year in all the years I've been doing this, most of July 16ths are a little slow. Mm. Not today. It's really a testament to us as a sports town. You know, Nashville SC's got stuff going on. We had the big soccer tournaments over the weekend. Mm-hmm. We've really got the calendar much more filled up than we ever have before. So we're excited that you're listening with us. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So I'm always interested, D-Mace, mm-hmm. when you hear a guy – it's been a champion, right? He's accomplished a lot in the league. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. There is a certain trait that you get that comes across in an interview. You can just tell he's a pro. He's been through this drill a lot of times. Even though this is a brand new thing for him, going to a new team for the first time, I was pretty impressed with that element that came through.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's difficult, you know, when you've been somewhere for a long period of time, like Stamkos, or, you know, like Brady, even myself being here for 8 years, you don't see individuals, you know, have two contracts in one place. Look at the Titans. How many guys have they re-upped after their rookie contract? Not many.
Yeah.
Not many, whether it be for play or they just choose to go somewhere else to make more money. So when you are faced with that, you know, that's sort of, you understand in your mind you got a job to do with your next team, but that does hurt some as a player. You've been here for this long, and then all of a sudden, you know, a lot of times it's contractual. You know, the team chooses not to retain you. You know, you go to your next team, what are you thinking? You're thinking like, yeah, I'm gonna show them. I'm going to mm-hmm. make them pay. I'm going to show them that I still got a lot left in the tank. So I'm glad we got Stamkos in this sort of phase of his career, because he still believes he can play high-level hockey, and he's pissed off right now. You know, that's a good recipe, I think. you know, for a team, at least for the Nashville Predators.
I think you're going to get it with Marchessault as well. And so I do think that is something that is becoming a theme that people are picking up on, is keep an eye on Nashville because they're getting a couple of guys here. Not only are they really good players in a vacuum, mm-hmm. but that element on top of it, wanting to show everybody you still got it, want to stick it to, not that you want your old team to hurt, but you exactly. want everybody to know I'm a competitor, I'm a winner, and I'm not done.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
I think that's what Barry Trotz has been selling too, that going back the whole thing, he set the table for this type of thing when he said, when people come here, mm-hmm. it can be a destination because there's a lot to like about our city and raising a family and everything like that, but I want you to come here to win. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he brought guys in that, whether you want to call them serial winners or not, but he brought guys in that want to win, that still he believes have more than enough, left in the tank to help this team within the next couple of years win a national championship, but to win a Stanley Cup. So I am looking forward to, seeing, this new look Nashville Predator team on the ice, because it may start off slow, people, and I'm expecting that, but once they find their skates, so to speak, I think this is going to be a damn good team.
I think you're right. Knock on wood, mm-hmm. that they stay relatively
healthy. Now they
got to
stay healthy because of the age of the team. You got to stay healthy, but I think this team, if they repeat what they did last year from a health standpoint, they are a 110 point type of team. I believe.
I think they can get back into the dance and have a little more to bring to the table. Mm-hmm. Like Stamkos, how often do you hear Jared? He loves the term "big boy forward."
Uh huh.
Well, Stamkos and Marchessault are the type of guys who can score the big goal for you, have scored the big goal in the big games. And that's what maybe was the difference between them winning the series against Vancouver and not winning, mm-hmm. is just not quite having enough guys who could make the big play at the big time. The more guys like that you have, mm-hmm. the better your chances are of winning a series that is going to come down to the margins, right? It's so close. That series was so close. So hopefully that's the kind of thing that could help you get over the top. Brent Venables from Oklahoma is at the podium now. Yes, Oklahoma, SEC Media Days, they're in the league. So that is weird. And they have a ton of media down there, Oklahoma and Texas, with it being down in that area. So as we talked about with Chad Withrow, it's kind of a different ingredient, different vibe than it ever has been before, just some of the shots I'm seeing. And I've been in the Omni Hotel in Dallas many times with the Predators, so I can picture it. But Radio Row is a different flavor. It's not the same thing jammed into the Wyndham Hotel where you've been in Birmingham, where you're jam-packed like sardines and the Radio Row goes out into the mall. You always knew your status wasn't great if you were hanging out in the mall.
Yeah.
The carpet runs out and you're on that walkway in the mall, like, man.
When you're closer
to
the mall,
for those guys.
That's not a good thing.
when you feel the breeze every time somebody opens the door to the mall, you're in the wrong spot.
Yeah, you're in the wrong spot.
Hey,
yeah.
By the way, listen to Willie over here. The food jargon he's bringing up. Sardines, flavor, ingredients.
Yeah. I actually like sardines.
I do.
Willie?
Oh, that's awful.
It's got to be the right kind. My brother got me turned on to these.
You talk about the sardines like in a can. You kind of peel the can back.
Yeah. You put a little olive oil on there.
Man.
Salt.
Not bad.
I stopped eating that stuff when once I left Spring Garden, man. Spring Garden was my first original street that I lived on when I was younger. When I was a little kid, a little Mason running around.
Yeah.
Once we moved from Spring Garden, I stopped eating sardines, man. No, not another sardine in my mouth.
Like sardines
ever
on your pizza?
No. Oh, not on the pizza.
Really?
On the pizza?
Yeah.
That's like having anchovies, man. Ugh.
Anchovies, sardines.
No. I'm not mixing those
Come
worlds.
Come on, okay. Nick. Sardines?
I'm not a fan, but my grandmother is. I'm just saying.
All right. She get a pass. Okay. Your grandmother get a pass.
By the way, you mentioned sports and how it's just bebopping along. It reminds me of Waffle House at 2 a.m. That's what it reminds me of. Just
bebopping along.
It's just packed.
There you go.
You're talking about a nice...
July 16th? Yeah.
You get into Waffle House past midnight between... It'll be hopping in there.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to get some characters.
It'll be hopping in there, yeah.
Steak and eggs.
It's good stuff. All right. Well, you got to experience it to know what we're talking about. If you know, you know, right?
Cheesy grits.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk quarterbacks. There was a great clip that Nick Saban, by the way, Nick Saban has been a home run plus for SEC Network. When you see him at the desk, you pay attention to what he's saying. He is prepared. Great perspective on the league. He gives his perspective on quarterbacks. Carson Beck was talked about a lot with Kirby Smart. He is championing the fact that he stayed for 3 years, and now he is reaping the benefits from being in one system developed by one coaching staff, and now has a chance to be a very high first-round pick and have another crack at a national title here. Nick Saban has his thoughts on quarterbacks and also how it relates to developing pro quarterbacks. And we're going to turn that into a discussion about Will Levis in the next segment. So you're going to want to listen to this. Stay tuned. You're listening to Willie and D. Mace on 102.5 The Game.